Here we go. It is January 30th. This is my audio journal entry. No ideas this past week, or no little sketches. But there are, so I did make some progress. Had the idea, and I said it an episode or two ago, and it was that it was a concept of, you know, if a sound never hits air, right? If it's only ever, you know, just been like electronically or electrically created. Well, it's not really a question, but those sounds, right? What if I made an album that every sound had to have been in the air at one point was my idea. And I had avoided stuff like that because as I mentioned before, microphones are hard. Like, capturing clean recordings is something that is very difficult, and it's why I feel like professional recording studios, not that they exist, but, you know, they're very tuned for keeping out outside noises, keeping inside noises to a minimum and isolating, but still having good acoustics, right? Instead of just stuffing everything into a tiny little box that air can't get in or out of, or it has ports or something. And that's the nice thing about recording studios, is there are these very isolated environments with good, clean equipment that's maintained. And so I'm working on the second floor, which is almost like an attic. It does have like a pitched roof kind of a thing, which has been fantastic for the acoustics because it's not a square room. And so there are all these, you know, weird angles that I think help with diffusing. And so I have been able to get a pretty flat response up here just from doing a pretty minimal amount of absorption. So I've been very happy with the sound up here. And so one of the weird tidbits about the space is at the corners of the room, or on the sides of the house, or on the sides of the rooms, where the pitch of the roof, and it starts to get, the ceiling gets pretty low because the pitch of the roof is going down, there are these little cubby holes that it's hard to describe, but I basically have a room that is maybe 6 feet long by about 2.5-3 feet wide. And then it has a pitched roof, you know, it has a slanted roof above it that is roughly 5 or 6 feet on the tall side, and then 3 to 4 feet on the short side. And so what I decided to do was to turn that into a guitar amp, like, isolation room. It's not very isolated, like, the sound totally gets out. So what I did was, I put my amp in there, and I set up my microphones, and then I just tried it. And I got some results. Results, I was pretty happy with it, but it was so loud. It was so loud that was in there. I wanted to try to isolate it from the sound from getting into to where at least my monitors had a fighting chance of me hearing more of my monitors than I did of the guitar amp in the other room. And so I just went to Lowe's, bought a couple of moving blankets, and just tacked them up, threw my amp in there, recorded again. And so the funny part about this is that if you notice on this track, the right channel of it kind of gets blown out every now and then. So one of the neat things that I did was I played, since I hooked it up, I do have a four channel snake and a snake box that I just have run in there. And so the signal comes off of my board and it's line level. Then it goes into basically a transformer that steps it down. It has a potentiometer on it so you can kind of dial in the levels. And so I have that kind of set to halfway. And then I have the amp turned all the way up. So it's a Fender 5F1 Champ. So little 8-inch speaker, Alnico. Weber speaker, so I really love that speaker. But the whole rig sounds, I kind of designed this, or I designed, my intent with that amp is I want clean headroom. I don't want it to break up at all. So for whatever reason, it is least noisiest when the volume knob is turned all the way up. So I just turned the volume on the amp all the way up, and then I adjust the volume from the signal of the volume going in. and it sounds great. It sounds really good. I'm really happy with it, and it doesn't break up or barely breaks up. It's right on that edge of distortion. But you could still, it's still a clean sound. And then for the microphones, I have my stereo pair of Royer R10s, which are ribbon microphones. And those have just been the best purchase I think I've made for microphones. I think I just really like ribbon microphones. I really like those microphones as well because they just take off some of the top end. So it's just a naturally kind of darker sound that I think that I just gravitate to. So, those are the microphones that are capturing. They're in a Blumline configuration, but there isn't much of a stereo spread, but that's fine. I just wanted a stereo signal. I guess the idea there being that, you know, if everything is going to exist as a sound, I want to capture it like people hear, which is in stereo. People don't hear in mono. And so even if I have like a very narrow stereo image from the capture of something, you know, I want it to be a stereo capture. Is louder is because of the pitched roof. It's because of the way the acoustics are in that little room. It's that flat surface is basically pointed at that right wall. And so, you know, you're going to get more buildup on that side. So I didn't want that, obviously. You know, I think that would mean that everything that I record will be, you know, right heavy, or I'll have to reverse the stereo or something to balance out the image if I combine two stereo signals. And so I just had a couple of acoustic panels that I think I made too many acoustic panels, I think, for what my room needed. I think I over put too much absorption up at first, and so everything sounded a little too dead in here. And so I took a couple of them down that I just liked the way it sounded better. It might not be as flat, but it just sounded better, or I enjoyed it more. So I kept them down. So they've just kind of been sitting in these random places. But, you know, I had two panels, so I was like, okay, well, let's just do the easy part. And let's put, I had one panel that is very thick. It's 8 inches of absorption, which is a ton. It's a very big panel. I think it's 4 feet by 4 feet. And so it's really heavy. It's really big. So I put it on the right side, and then I put a regular sized, like 4 feet by 2 feet. Like 4 feet by 2 feet panel, and on the left side, and it only has one layer of rock wool in it, so only 4 inches. And it worked. I think it might have, I have a very dry sound. There's not a lot of acoustic sound, a lot of acoustics in the signal now. And I think that, I guess that's fine. You know, I would always like to have a little bit of room. This works, right? So I think I got a very clean recording. The noise floor is fine. I was able to get a healthy signal. I mean, it seems like it just sounds good. And so I'm gonna run with it because it sounds good. I don't think that it'll need reamping in a bigger room. I'm going to experiment with, I've always wanted to reamp for reverb instead of I've always wanted to reamp, you know, a signal in a room and capture it and then probably mix it with the dry signal a little bit and use that as like the real reverb instead of using algorithmic reverb. Though I do love algorithmic reverb, and it'll probably show up somewhere. But I don't know. That's an idea for later, because accessing spaces with good reverb, you know, could be, I think, is going to be a chore right now with the pandemic still going on and only wanting to do things when it's absolutely safe, because this is just so not important, this project, or it's not important enough to ask anybody to take any risks. So I'm just going to wait until it's completely safe, and then I'll just, you know, stay in whatever mode that I'm in, and just do as much work as I can. And then whenever it's time to go out and capture, so So that was the guitar room. And so, and I did actually, just before I sat down, I did work on A Forest in the Mountains a little bit. And I have finally decided and experimented some more. So with the key of D instead of the key of B. And what I did is, or what I'm going to do, or what I'm tracking now, is that it's going to be in the key of D, which the B, the note of B, right, is a sixth or the minor. And so I created a scale, and the scale is B, C sharp, F sharp, and A. Is it C sharp? Hold on. No, it's B. It's B, D, C sharp, A. So it's four notes, so it's not quite a pentatonic. I'm sure it's just... Yeah, I think maybe it's just missing the E, and it would be a blues pentatonic, or not blues pentatonic, but just the pentatonic scale. So that is basically, I think that's the framework in which I'm going to work in, is hitting the note of B for the octaves, and kind of that, you know, until I can't take hitting those notes anymore, and then the other notes are the notes in that scale, that is going to be the piece. And so I need to perform it more, I think. Or I need to practice performing it more, so that way whenever I go record on the piano, which could be one of the first things that I do, because that's pretty easy. I just pop down to my friend's house with, you know, my microphones and my mix spree and capture it. Or maybe not even my microphones, might just need my mix spree. And so, you know, capture 2 or 3 performances and then call it a day. And so, yeah. So that's the progress, I guess, on that. And then I am going to start working on heel. I think that is the next. Where is? Yeah, Heel from Your Journey. So that is the third song. And then, ooh, Her Story. That could be two good ones. So, yeah, I need to start putting thought into those pieces. And I think that is all for now. I think that those pieces are going to be, I need to, since I documented the modular synth patch from last week, I'm going to break down that patch and start thinking for ideas again. I've had the thought of doing a performance with the modular synth, specifically the IntelliGel palette, the Ansible, and the Monome, running in Earthsea mode, doing a performance there with the looper. I guess I have an idea for a rack, which is the palette, and it is the Ansible, the Mangrove oscillator, the Labad looper, and yeah, just trying, and that's it. Like, that's seeing what I can do with a looper and just being able to perform. I don't know if I want polyphony yet. There's part of me that wants to take polyphony away and just turn it into, like, get polyphony from the looper. Which is probably what I'll do, and gives me more options for designing the rack. So anyways, I might do something like that with the Heel from Your Journey, but simplify a bit. And so have a mono signal out of that, and then, you know, reamp or put it through the guitar rig and reamp it. So Yeah, that's the next steps. Put some thought into it, and that's it. So I'd like to take the time to talk about gear purchases. Something I decided to do for 2021 was budget and plan every gear purchase that I'm going to make for the entire year before the year begins. So in my notes, I have everything that I am allowed to buy for 2021, and it's not a very big list. So, and the intent there is to not get distracted by buying a piece of gear and then going down that rabbit hole, and that sticking to the plan. And I had a bit of a crisis of confidence. So one of the things that I budgeted for was I wanted to buy two what DIY 500 series projects from a company called Cappy, which is like Classic API or something like that. Products, and they make a DIY project called Audio Bacon. So Audio Bacon is a line level amplifier with two filters on it, a high pass and a low pass filter. And so my intention was is that I was going to use it on the synth or as a preamplifier or a line amplifier for the synth. But now that changed, I think, a little bit, and I think that I'm going to change that purchase from that item to just two good preamplifiers. So Rupert Neve Designs, they have a preamplifier called the 511, and the reason why I'm going to change is it checks off more boxes. So I ran out of, now that I have my amp room, so my mic setup is that I do have a Blumline of ribbons, the Royer R10s, and that is probably going to be the main mic. But so the mic stand holder that I have also, it has three mounts for microphones on there. And so just because I could, basically, I also added directly above the Blumline pair a large diaphragm condenser, the Audio Technica AT3035. And the intent there was is that it will capture the high frequencies that the Royers miss out on. And so what I would do is the Royers would obviously be stereo pan, but then I have a mono center signal of the condenser microphone. And so, and I would just have a mix. And after listening, I kind of decided that I just liked the ribbons by themselves. And so, I kept running out of, with this configuration, if I do want to add back in that condenser, I kept running out of mic preamps, basically, because I needed a preamp for the dry guitar signal. I needed a preamp for the three microphones. So that's four preamps that I would need. And I have a DIY RE CP5 preamp. I don't like it. I want to get rid of it. Or I'm planning on selling it. And I broke one of them. I don't know how. Just one of the switches on them broke. And I guess it just doesn't work without that switch. The switch is easy enough to replace. And I plan on fixing it and selling it. But I decided that... So that's one piece, is I kept running out of mic preamps. And even though I have four... So the problem was... And I think why one of the preamps broke is that I also have the DIY RE color palette, which is this way of adding analog saturation of your choice to a signal. And I had a stereo pair of them, and they kind of sat on the master bus just to add some, you know, put them through a transformer and get that transformer sound. And so... Basically, the Neve 511 combines those two things. I'm glad that I had the DIY RE color palettes to kind of figure out which colors that I liked. And, it is Transformers. I like the way Transformers sounds because I have a tube color palette. And then I got the tape saturation. And then I have the CTX, I think is its call, which is just a transformer and a discrete op amp. And I like the transformer, the discrete op amp best. So the Neve 511 is not only a preamplifier, but it also has this thing called Silk. And so all Silk is it adds a DC bias to the audio signal before it hits the transformer. And adding a DC bias to an AC signal that goes into a transformer drives the transformer into saturation. And so I'm sure it does a couple of other things. And so what that does is that rounds off, that adds basically, that adds harmonics to the signal because of the distortion. And the effect of that is that it kind of makes the high end, it gives it a little bit of a high end bump with a frequency response. So it's not the same as, you know, just boosting the EQ a little bit. It has its own sound to it. So anyways, instead of buying, and one of the nice things, and I think the crucial checkbox that got checked with the 511 is that it's designed with an extremely high input impedance. So it has a 10K input impedance. Most preamplifiers have 1.2 to 3K at the high end of input impedance. And basically it just has enough clean gain that, the idea behind it is a higher input impedance means that it is going to load the microphone less. So that means that the microphone diaphragm is going to be freer to vibrate when sounds hit it. And the reason why is because they're transducers, right? So they're creating a magnetic field. And so the impedance that they're coupled to, so whenever you plug a microphone into a preamp or an amplifier of some sort, there is a coupling. There is an output impedance from the microphone, and then there is an input impedance from the preamp. And so, and that coupling is very important for how the microphone behaves in response. And oftentimes, the impedance matching of mic preamps to microphones is actually, if recording engineers, they love certain combinations of mics to mic preamps. And a lot of that, I believe, has to do with the impedance matching of those two pieces of equipment. And not just, along with, obviously, the circuitry that's the type of mic. Like, there are a lot of variables there, but I think a very important one is that impedance matching. So the 511 has a 10K input impedance. And so generally, 10K is actually line level input impedance. But I think now, you know, why? So the question is, why doesn't everybody do this? Is because, so if you plug in, you know, a ribbon microphone to a line amplifier, there's not going to be enough gain on the line amplifier to get the ribbon up to a reasonable level to capture a mix or whatever. It's just, there's not enough gain. But the way that the 511 is designed is there is enough gain on tap that you can have a high input impedance. So the microphone's not loaded, which is going to change. I think that the byproduct of that is it's able to catch higher frequencies with a less loaded microphone. So I'm interested to see, basically, if the Royers will get... how the Royers will sound going through there. I love the way that they sound right now when paired with my SSL-6. I'm interested to see how they get paired with, you know, how they pair with the 511 with that deloading and then the Silk, which can add back in the top end if I wanted to. And so I think that that's... And so that's one thing that I'm just kind of interested in kind of playfully. But I think the other piece is I can put a synth through there. I can use that as that line amplifier without, you know, generally there's a button, right, that switches from mic to line. But for this, you would just turn the volume or turn the gain all the way down on the preamplifier. If that's a reasonable enough level and it should be able to, it's not going, it will give you a healthy line input signal because it has a 10K input impedance, which is what line devices are used to seeing. So I think that I just went ahead and bought a pair of those so that way I could continue working. And so the last gear purchase that I think I am, well, last is a relative, you know, it's not last, but another piece of the puzzle that I'm crucially missing is right now I only have what I would like to get a Roland JC20 jazz chorus, you know, bedroom jamming amplifier. And the reason why is because it has stereo inputs and it's a stereo amp. So putting a keyboard through it works well. And so my idea is that the sound of this record is going to be the modular synth is going to get reamped or just captured from the way that I am going to turn, you know, the modular synth sounds and put them through the air is going to be through that amp. And then you know, if it happens, and the reason why that amp is important is because it's stereo. And there also could be something interesting to do with it has a digital reverb on it, so there could be a fun thing to do is to add reverb in the amp. And then I wonder how that would sound. You know, and then into the room, right? Like, so there's reverb, so it makes it sound like a huge hall or something like that. But then that spills out into like my tiny little guitar room. That could be a fun thing to play with, or it could be a fun sound. So yeah, that is the progress that was made. Is this was a very technical week. And just kind of getting prepped for, I guess, like capturing performances. So yeah, that's this audio journal.